From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. We're just weeks before the November 3rd election. Poll numbers show former Vice President Joe Biden with a strong lead over incumbent Donald Trump. But 4 years ago, there were similar polls showing a lead for the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton, and the rest is history. My next guest says that Donald Trump is a domestic enemy to the Constitution and says that the world of human civilization cannot afford another 4 years of Trump's presidency. In an op-ed for the Metro Times in Michigan, Daniel Ellsberg sounds the alarm on what he calls an authoritarian threat to our democratic system of a kind we've never seen before. Daniel Ellsberg is a lecturer, scholar, writer, and activist, former Defense and State Department official who faced 115 years in prison for disclosing the Pentagon Papers in 1971. He's the author of 4 books, including The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner. He's the winner of the Right Livelihood Award. And his op-ed is entitled, Trump is an Enemy of the Constitution and Must Be Defeated. Welcome to the program, Daniel.
Thank you. It's a very great opportunity to be here, Sonali.
So let's first talk about the fact that Biden is not your ideal candidate, just as Hillary Clinton wasn't many people's ideal candidate 4 years ago. And yet he is who is now running against Trump, right? So it's important to acknowledge that.
Yes, I don't think it's necessary to still in any degree a progressive criticism of Joe Biden. And really, that's pretty strong. He started out, I understand, back in 1973 as a New Deal Democrat, really. But by the end of the decade and by the 80s, he was really moving considerably more to the right, to some degree even before the Democratic Party did. So he has a background of legislation that I won't go into right now. There's so many other things to talk about, but I'll just say there's a lot for a progressive to criticize there. He had a lot to do with the explosive expansion of the incarceration system in the country. He's responsible for shepherding, not obstructing in any way, three previous conservative members of the Supreme Court when he was head of the Judiciary Committee. He supported the Iraq War as the head of the Foreign Relations Committee. I'll say very bluntly, I would have said at the beginning of this campaign system that should rule out a serious candidate for the Democratic nomination. It shows terrible judgment and had terrible consequences. So all of that adds up to his not at all being my favorite, it being near, very frankly, the bottom of my list of Democratic candidates. And yet, and it's not necessary because I do want him to win. I do want him to defeat Donald Trump. And I think that can be done without silencing oneself at all as to what the challenge will be if he does, as I hope, get four years as president. There will be a great challenge for progressives to oppose and resist, I think, or many proposals he comes up with, as at the very least inadequate. That's almost sure to be the case. And some maybe even worse than that. I should mention, by the way, that in the last 6 months or so, he has opened up and reflected the help, participation, and criticism of people like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who very greatly improved his climate proposal. And I do hope that he, with realism, I think, that he really is open to pressure from the left on these scores in a way that Donald Trump is not remotely open to. But the basic issue here is that his rival is a danger not only to this country and to the many people who died under his totally incompetent and almost inexplicable mishandling of the pandemic, and the millions of people who've been infected by that. But in above all, we'll get to this, I'm sure, his climate catastrophe in the way of his policies, which simply could not be abided for the next 4 years, and his threat to democracy in this country. So we're facing someone here, we're a very flawed candidate from my point of view. And let's face it, you know, humans are flawed. All humans are flawed. Certainly I am, as I know very well. But even from almost anyone's point of view, no president is anywhere near perfect in terms of a particular point.
On the one hand, you have a candidate who thinks that it's okay to not ban fracking and may view the Green New Deal favorably, but doesn't want to embrace it. And then on the other hand, you have someone who basically is an enemy of the fight against climate change. So those are the choices, right?
Well, let's be, when you say an enemy, let's be specific on that. It's not only that he's in denial of the nature of climate change, like as is most of his party and many of his constituents. He is really doing everything he can that I can see to maximize the not only the emissions from fossil fuel burning that create the carbon dioxide that give us the global warming. That's increasing, and he's doing everything he can, I think, to increase the rate at which it's increasing. It's got to come down. Biden has, like influenced by Bernie Sanders here, I think, and AOC, has a climate plan that seeks to reduce emissions by half significantly. By the Paris Agreement called for that by 2030. He's setting a date in some cases of all fuel be by solar and wind and whatnot, electricity, by 2035. He may or may not achieve that. And his goal, his instruments are probably inadequate, although they have come up to looking as though they could be adequate. In comparison, I said, we're facing somebody who has no intention even of reducing at all. All of his policies point toward eliminating regulations that would constrain.
Right. He wants to roll back any modest changes steps we've taken, basic things like vehicle emission standards.
Obama administration was inadequate on this. And in terms of implementation of Paris, every country has been inadequate on this. But there isn't another person in the world of a head of a large state. One could say Bolsonaro, maybe, but well, Noam Chomsky in Brazil. But when Noam Chomsky calls Donald Trump the worst person in the world, the worst leader in the world on this subject, that sounds like hyperbole, but actually it isn't. And he's head, unlike Bolsonaro in Brazil, he's head of the most powerful country in the world, leading the world in the wrong direction. I think another 4 years of Donald Trump would simply lead to irremediable damage, meaning that for millennia, the marks of that would be showing whatever else we do. We can't afford that. And that means that the greatest imperative at this moment is to get Donald Trump out of the White House, which may not be easy just by voting, but voting is essential to that.
Let's talk about the danger that Trump represents to just even basic freedoms, to our right to protest, for example. He has characterized himself as a law and order president, but it seems as though he is not interested in law, because if he was, he wouldn't be sending federal troops to quell protests. He may be interested in order, but order only of the kind that he sees. And we've the state that you're from, Daniel, where your op-ed was published in Michigan, we saw a number of men arrested over a plot to kidnap the governor, who were also interested in kidnapping the governor of Virginia. This seems to me to be something that should be laid at Trump's feet, because he has encouraged this kind of behavior while clamping down on protest, all of these things going against the Constitution, right?
Trump claims that the great danger to stability in this country, to law and order, is left-wing or Antifa, as he likes to call it, or anarchists. As the FBI and Homeland Security have made clear in the Senate, in the Republican Senate, in report after report, that is flatly untrue. It doesn't mean there is no threat under that rock throwing and glass cutting in protest, which I think is entirely counterproductive, which goes against our goals. But the threat is from right-wing militias. And it occurred to me this morning that that could actually serve an interest in his in having martial law at some point, either affecting the election or just generally cutting into his, feeding into his interest in staying in office indefinitely. Similarly, I just happened to read this morning, various other things I was looking into, your wonderful article of March 19th this year on the possibilities, and I would refer people to that to read it. It has wonderful links. It's very good. But it raises the questions of what he could do in the way of issuing emergency orders and statutes. And you did very well in listing them, but actually...
Wow, thank you. I'm not sure which article that was, but I will look it up. Thanks, Daniel.
Yeah. Actually, you didn't even get in so much, Sonali, to something I've studied for over 40 years, is the continuity of government regulations, capitals OG, continuity of government, which are executive branch regulations, directives. They're not legislation, which allegedly, and in the way of leaks, allow for suspending the Constitution. Those three words. Now, he didn't start that. That goes way back and has evolved and elaborated in each administration. I actually have a suspicion that the Bush administration, right after 9/11, they did declare a state of emergency, which has been renewed by every president since, including Obama and Trump. Most people don't seem to be aware of that. The question is, just what does that allow for? When Trump says, I have powers that you don't even know, you know, that go beyond anything you know, I read that and I hear him referring to the classified parts which Congress can't get at. No committee, this is astonishing, but no committee, to my knowledge, has had their requests satisfied to learn what the classified annexes of these emergency regulations are. And they very well, I think it's quite possible that in Bush, they really felt that in their what seemed like ad hoc measures against the Constitution, like the Patriot Act, the total surveillance by NSA of people, the torture, the detention, the Guantanamo, are not just ad hoc, but actually are part of those emergency regulations. And they think of themselves as operating beyond the Constitution. No hearing in Congress has ever been held to really explore that. I'm mentioning in particular, Sonali, because your article does, you know, get into that area very much and didn't actually mention this particular part of it. And when you see the people in Michigan having a plan and prepared for what amounts to an insurrection, you're taking over the state house, kidnapping, possibly assassinating the governor and others, being armed for that, would be an occasion I can well imagine for the president to declare martial law.
And the other aspect that's coming up in recent days are numerous reports in the New York Times and Rolling Stone and ProPublica about the shooting death of Michael Reinhold, the self-declared Antifa activist who was basically gunned down by federal troops in September, early September. And they claimed that he shot at the officers trying to arrest them. He was killed in a volley of bullets, and now multiple witnesses are saying that there was no warning given. The federal officers basically assassinated him, and Trump hailed it as retribution. Bill Barr called it, you know, something justifiable. And if they can do that to this man, who basically was a suspect in a murder, did not get a fair trial, did not have a chance to have a trial because he was killed, then what can they do to the rest of us?
Well, there are more precedence for some of these things than we, than the mainstream media like to admit. Mm-hmm. Let me go back on one thing. When I call Trump a domestic enemy of the Constitution, I'm using words that I were in an oath that I swore as a Marine lieutenant, and later as an employee of the Defense Department and as an employee of the State Department. And I raised my hand and swore to defend, not, by the way, to keep secrets. That was an agreement that was not an oath. I did not take an oath to the president or the commander-in-chief or the Fuhrer. It was solely, like every other member of the government, executive branch, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Now, I recognized a predecessor of Trump, in my mind, as a domestic enemy of the Constitution. And that was Richard Cheney, the vice president under Bush. And for a lot of reasons I could go into, but I believe that his intention was to replace our Constitution with a far more authoritarian one that swept aside major restraints on executive power. And I'll just mention one thing, the total surveillance was just wiping out the Fourth Amendment, a right of privacy, essentially, and putting us all under a potential police state, making it possible. But there were other things as well that Cheney went into. Most presidents, maybe all of them, do actually in the course of their term violate the Constitution in one way or another, in an ad hoc way when it serves their purposes. Sure. And they do it covertly and they don't want to be found out. But I wouldn't say that it was their intention, as I believe it was for Richard Cheney, to really move to a different form of government. That's what I see in Donald Trump. And again, Sonali, you quoted very well, I just saw it this morning, the occasions on which he has talked lightly about being in office more than the 8 years that the Constitution now allows him, 10 years, 14 years, 20 years. He'd be pretty old at that. These are not jokes that any other previous president made. I don't think they are to be brushed aside altogether. I think people of your age and other younger have no particular image of Benito Mussolini in Italy. Tell me if I'm wrong.
I mean, you know, just from history books, but, you know, not in any great detail.
To see Benito Mussolini. Now, he more or less invented the word fascist from a Latin word, fascis, and a dictator, essentially, in effect. His fascist party was the first fascist party in the early 20s. I think we don't have a fascist state now, but we have a would-be fascist in the White House. And he is, I think, a wannabe Mussolini in many ways. And an ironic thing is that even in appearance, I've been struck by that. If you go to the YouTube now, which we didn't have before, go to it and look at Benito Mussolini speaking from his balcony. He liked to look down on the masses. He'd be above them as a strong man. And there's, you look at him on the balcony, there's one from Rome that doesn't quite make this point. I do have a clip, if you look enough, it was somewhere else, I've forgotten where it is, where the outthrust jaw, which was the scowl, the self-satisfaction beaming down, the full hugging himself, you think you're looking at Donald J. Trump from his balcony of the White House. Now, that could just be a coincidence. I think, though, first of all, I'm not sure that it is. It's so close that I can imagine that he has seen pictures of Mussolini in his youth and he's imitating them. But the strong man, that's the idea. We cut aside restraints. We do what is necessary. I am the state. That's the essence of this. And, of course, his racism, his authoritarianism in many ways, and coming back to what you were writing about, Sonali, the possibility that he will not allow himself by election process and a constitutional process to be thrown out of his balcony.
Right.
I want to throw him out of his balcony. Thrown out of the White House, actually, deprived of that particular balcony. As Michael Cohen, I just finished reading his book with great interest. it begins and ends with his firm belief as someone who was a henchman, a hatchet man for Donald Trump.
Fixer, maybe.
He says, this man will not leave office peacefully. And I think that's a warning that is not just meant for sales in his book. I think he means that very sincerely, and we should listen to him.
Well, finally, Dan, the situation that we're facing right now with Trump, you know, getting ready to unleash poll watchers, all of this is happening at a time when he's also looking to ensure his supermajority in the Supreme Court. He's made it clear that if he can't win at the ballot box, he will go to the Supreme Court, where he's installing a justice right now. And that justice, who wouldn't even say that voter intimidation is illegal when asked, is one that could come into play. She's being rushed into position to protect Trump, it seems. And that's happening with the enabling of a whole party behind Trump. So my final question to you is, yes, Trump is an issue, but and a huge problem, it's such a threat to our Constitution. But he has the machinery of a whole party behind him right now.
Again, if I may quote Chomsky in what would sound hyperbolic, but isn't. He said for years now, the Republican Party is the most dangerous organization on earth. Now, how could that be true? Well, it is true because they have espoused this maximum emission of fossil fuels into the atmosphere, which affects civilization, humanity, everybody on earth. It won't lead to our extinction, but it will lead to, you know, a total transformation of the environment hostile to humans at that point. And the Republicans are full on in this, absolutely. So it's mind-boggling here as to how they could be doing that. But I want to say right up now, people are saying, you started the program with this, yes, the polls are saying that he should have a that Biden should have a landslide. Don't worry about it, it's going there. But as you pointed out, that's what we were hearing this time 4 years ago. And I just can't see how anyone, whether it's Nate Silver or anyone else, can feel really confident in those polls. And that means that getting him out of office will require, let me be very specific, will require progressives who are as critical of Biden as I am, and I yield to no one in that, not only to vote for Biden in a swing state where this will be determined, the battleground states, but to work for him, to urge everybody else in their environs, everybody to whom they have an audience, to vote for Biden despite their reservations for him, because that's the number one task. And really what an individual does on election day, an individual, is not as important as to what they do in the weeks leading up to that election in terms of using their potential influence to affect this election. And in a swing state, even a minority like us progressives, if I speak that way, let me define progressive. For practical purposes, I think it's someone who sees the Green Party platform as very preferable to the Democratic platform. And the Democratic platform of this month, let's say, is being very preferable to what it would have been a year ago, prior to Bernie Sanders and so forth. Okay, those people may well feel so angry at the Democrats for not being better and for not giving them the candidate they want, that they would be tempted not to vote at all, or to vote even for Trump, as a number of Bernie people did in 2016. That was vindictive against the Democratic Party in a way that had a lot of collateral damage, as the Pentagon says, a lot of victims all around the world. Let's not do that again. And angry as we may be, let that anger transform into a passion to assure that if Trump does lose the election, he gets out, where he will contest it in any case. There has to be massive demonstrations, I think, against that. A general strike is in no way excessive on that. Not violence, which can only serve Trump's desire to use the military and the police and militias to establish an authoritarian rule. But massive nonviolence in a nonviolent activity, not only in the next month, but it'll be needed in the next 4 years and beyond that. But it doesn't substitute for electoral activity in the next 3 weeks. They have to be, you have to have both.
Well, Daniel Ellsberg, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your Metro Times op-ed from our website. Thank you and good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Daniel Ellsberg, lecturer, scholar, writer, and activist, former Defense and State Department official who faced 115 years in prison for disclosing the Pentagon Papers in 1971. We've been discussing his op-ed in the Metro Times in Michigan entitled "Trump is an Enemy of the Constitution and Must Be Defeated." I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.